My bracket is still perfect.
Welcome back to Hoops HD. This is our Hoops HD report, Sweet 16 edition.
Woohoo! What's that?
Go back to watching the CRT. We've got a show.
Oh, okay. Well, it's a good game. It's at the time we're recording this, we're tied with a minute to go in the opening round of the CIT. And hey, well, there's more people watching this than there are watching that.
I'm your host, Chad Sherwood. We've got David Griggs and John Titel up top on the bottom row down here. We got John Slica and the test pattern that is Lee Del Vecchio. Lee, welcome back. Been a long time since you've been on a podcast with us. Where the hell have you been?
Yeah, I'm suddenly regretting this decision. Just through no fault of your own or John's or even John's.
Shut up, you stupid test pattern. He likes quarters. He's got issues.
They're coming. You know what's happening.
No, they are not. I will not permit it. I will do anything in my power to stop that from happening.
You can do a lot more.
Our plan for tonight is to go through and talk about everything that's happened so far in the NCAA tournament, tell you what's going to happen from here on out. One thing that happened last week, though, is seven of us were on this podcast. We all gave Final Four picks, and I believe there is one and only one person left who actually has his four teams still alive, Kentucky, Michigan, Villanova, Kansas. That's all I got to say. But to move on, let's actually pull up the games. How's that, David?
Oh, okay. Pull up the games. I can do that.
There we go.
Oh, wait. You're talking about the bracket. Do you want to pull up the CIT?
No, I don't want to pull the CIT.
It's going on right now.
You said let's start. Not a cry for help.
We're going to start things off
with a minute to go.
In the South region, the region of insanity, we might call it. And Titel, let me start with you and the game of the tournament so far. We almost never thought it would happen. And to see the way it happened between UMBC and Virginia this weekend, last week, was just unbelievable.
I would say get rid of that almost. Like, I never, ever, ever thought it would happen. I actually had submitted, there's this thing called the Sloan Sports Analytics Conference that they do up in Massachusetts every winter. And occasionally they'll take, I guess every year, I think they'll take submissions from the general public. And so several years ago, I don't remember when, I suggested a topic that we will see in our lifetime a number 16 seed win a game. I can't say I honestly believed it. I just thought, like, it might be attention getting. My theory was that, oh, like, now we, in this era in the 21st century, you'll see high school McDonald's All-Americans going to schools besides Duke and North Carolina and Kentucky and Kansas. Like, most of them do, but there's the occasional outlier and parity and senior classes versus a team with a couple one-and-dones. But in good conscience, I didn't believe myself, and that's why they didn't pick my paper, amongst many other reasons. And I still don't believe it happened. If they played 99 more times, I would pick Virginia 99 more times.
A couple things about this. We've been – I mean, if you've been following us, I need to brag on us a little bit. We've been big on this UMBC program for the last couple years. Last year, I think we talked about how they were one of the biggest turnaround stories in all of college basketball, and they were. But one of the biggest surprises to us was still that win at Vermont. And I remember being kind of disappointed because not that we don't like UMBC's program, but that Vermont was good enough to win a game in the round of 64. Oh, boy, did we not know what was in store for next. It was stupefying. I always thought that if a 16 ever beat a 1, it would look very much like what we normally see when a 14 beats a 3 or a 15 beats a 2. It's nip and tuck the whole way. They stay in it and they stay in it and they stay in it. And then somehow at the end of the game, they're ahead. Not only did a 16 beat a 1, it matched the third largest margin of victory that any one seed has ever suffered at any stage of the tournament. It was just stupid what happened.
And on top of that, I guess the other big winner coming out of that game was the UMBC Twitter account, which entered the game with 4,000 followers. As of earlier today,
we were one of them. We were one of them.
Lee, as of earlier today, they were up to 108,000 followers. Some classic tweets coming out of UMBC during that game.
And that seems like more than the number from before, significantly. Yeah, no, just, I mean, look. The just dragging media members across multiple sports. I mean, that's That's the kind of multitasking that makes you confident in the leaders of the future. I mean, it's they were going – I'm stunned they didn't tweet at Goodell yet. I mean, they were going after baseball writers, pro basketball writers, college writers. But the fact that they then – they had, you know, the sense of humor, but also to mention, hey, by the way, here's the link to, you know, apply to come to the school. And, oh, we're looking for a sponsor for the new arena. You know, that was smart. It'll be interesting to see where this, you know, goes from here. But my thoughts are basically the same as David's. Like, you know, I thought we would see it someday. But I, you know, the fact that we're meeting is still kind of hard to reconcile. And
Lee, we're losing you there.
Yeah, Lee, you're fading out.
Oh, I'm sorry. Am I back?
A little bit. You're not.
Okay. Well, Lee, there's something wrong here. We lost your audio.
Sorry about that. Hang on.
There we go. Now you're back.
Yeah, sorry. But I was just saying, that's what happens when I say I agree with David. Just the system collapses.
No, that's what happens when you start running errands while talking.
Also that. but I agree with what he said in terms of I thought it would happen someday. I just thought the probability was too high. And we've seen you – I mean, I think – this podcast in the top 1,000th of a percent of knowing about these teams. So when you start following these teams, you by default become convinced in them at the higher level. I mean, I know I did not think that Virginia was going to lose to UMBC, but you know, we knew they were a good team. And I always thought when it happened, it would, like what David said, it would be a close game, but I mean, it was a beating, and it was a beating to a degree that messed with your mind. Cause I was talking with Gail, and I mean, part of it's Virginia style, but like the game was effectively over with 10 minutes to go. But I think I think everyone at home was just, even though it was like a 20 point game, you thought, well, at some point this will be tied, when that's, unless Cincinnati's involved, that's a ridiculous.
right. It's one of those games that really where, you know, had it been the reverse, had Virginia been up by 20, we would all switch the channels. But we just couldn't stop watching it. You just couldn't, not only because of the upset, but because you just kept feeling any second now Virginia's going to turn it on, that's going to be it. It's going to be game over. They're going to go on a 30-0 run, and they're going to win by 15.
Yeah, it's like, well, you know there's a run coming. Well, yeah, but they're down 22. Like, what, the run's going to do what exactly? And I thought one of the – because I jump on coaches as much as anyone else, as you guys know. The timeout that Odom called when the largest – I think it was Virginia's largest run of the second half. They went on a 5-0 run with 12 minutes to go, and he immediately called timeout. He was just not going to mess around. I thought that was – or no, it was just before the under 8. Instead of just waiting for the under 8, he was like, no, we're not messing around. I'm calling this timeout. Because who cares how many timeouts you have? Your team is up 15. Like, I thought that was brilliant. It was brilliant coaching. And my one lingering thought was, who felt worse about it, Virginia fans or Vermont fans? I mean, because
– yeah.
I think – I mean, it has to be Virginia fans, not just because of the humiliation, but – Vermont's had an NCAA moment. It wasn't like that, but nobody's had an NCAA moment like that.
Well, I would also nominate the Creighton fans, because they also had a missed opportunity in round one, because they also got blown out by K-State. And
yeah.
True.
Chad, I know you're wanting to move this along, but
we didn't more games here, David.
Yeah, we didn't watch every UMBC. Well, maybe I'll just wait till we get to the round of 32 game that they played. But what I was going to say was, I thought it was one of the more disappointing games that they played, that I watched them play all year, maybe aside from Maryland early on. But I felt really good going into that, and it was just you hate that it was a poorly played game, because had they played the way that they did at any juncture of the America East tournament, or certainly against, Virginia, I think they could have won this one. And I don't know if you know this or not, a little bit of a 16 has never beaten a 9.
No, a 16 has never beaten anybody but another 16 before this year. But K-State did pick up that win. They're in the Sweet 16. But, Stalika, let me hear from you a little bit about this. First of all, Kentucky taking out Davidson in what was a really close game there. And one of five seeds went 4-0 in this round, in fact, in the first round, after we talk about 12-5 upsets happening all the time, yet we still had crazy upsets. But Kentucky advancing all the way to the Sweet 16.
Well, if you had told me going into the Davidson game that Kentucky would not hit a single three-point shot and Davidson would hit about 8 or 9 of them, that probably would have seemed like the perfect recipe as far as an upset special goes. But defensively, they did just enough to slow Davidson down. And with Arizona's no-show in the second half, it provided about as easy a path as you'll see for Kentucky when you consider some of the comments that John Calipari had made before the tournament complaining about Kentucky's draw.
Kentucky having to go to Alaska for the first two rounds? Yeah, no problem. Tytel, we got to talk about your Arizona team. I know you don't want to, but...
no time. What are you talking about?
Completely didn't bother showing up against Buffalo.
Good Lord.
Indeed. There's no way to sugarcoat it, so I won't. It was a sad display. I was at the bar with about 10 other alumni, and at halftime, we're all like, thank God we're a second-half team because we're not playing that great. And then they just went in the toilet, and Buffalo started banking threes and shooting threes that would go front of the rim, backboard, back of the rim, front of the rim, back of the rim, and in. So when you give up 15 whatever threes, like, you're going to lose to anybody. The effort wasn't there. It seems like even though you have these dual seven-footers in Ayton and Ristich, like, you couldn't get them the ball in positions where they could do something inside. An embarrassingly horrible performance, and it seems like the whole team's leaving with Ayton and Tree and Alkins going pro, and the other guys seniors, and the recruiting class for next year already decommitted. I don't know if this team – forget about, like, a 4 seed next year. Forget about making the tournament next year. I don't know if this team is going to have a 500 record last year, and I can't remember the last time I've said that about a team from Tucson.
So from now on, you're just going to tell people you're a Penn guy, correct?
They had a better performance on Thursday, don't you think?
Yes, I do. I do. I actually do.
Yeah, I mean, that game, similar to what I said about the UMBC game, but not nearly as long-winded. Imagine you're like a forward for San Francisco or a guard, and you know how hard you work all offseason, you bust it, and you're in the gym, and you work hard, the team's not very good. And you get this time of year, and you're just hoping, you're just envious because you wish you got that chance. You imagine what's going through your mind as you're watching an Arizona team in the second half just absolutely not give a shit. Like, that would be infuriating to them as much as it would be the Arizona fans. Like, it's such a special opportunity for every single team that gets in this tournament. And to see a team just fold like Arizona did was just infuriating as a fan of the sport.
Well, David, let's look at what happened to Dallas, which was in the South region, which, you know, as if those first two pods in the South region weren't fun enough, what this Loyola Chicago team did with Sister Jean there, how about this story of them picking up these two wins?
I really like this Loyola team. We've been putting them inside of our bubble. I don't think they were quite there, but again, it's just kind of crazy to think that had things not fallen the right way in the Missouri Valley tournament, would they even be there? But, you know, trailing for most of the game against Miami, but hanging around, and then I remember thinking, like, we were all on the chat, and when they missed the layup in the final seconds, that would have put them ahead, thinking, man, they had a chance. How unfortunate. You know, one of the fun things about this tournament is seeing teams like Loyola and good teams from under the radar conferences that typically aren't in the spotlight, seeing them get a chance to show their stuff and on occasion even win a game or two. And it was like, oh man, they almost won a game. How big that would have been. And then to end up like coming down and just hitting the three from the parking lot for the win, it was pretty amazing. I didn't think Miami was the right matchup for them. I did think that there were 5-6 and even – well, 7-6s and even a 5 seed or two that they could beat. I just didn't think Miami was one of them. So it was a pretty big surprise, but a huge win for the program. First tournament in 30-something years.
And, since 1985.
Yeah, 85. When they were a 4 seed, I guess they had it going on back in the 80s. But and then they had another huge win in the round of 32. So they're still alive, but what a day in Dallas. Like, really, when you look at this half of the South region, you had a 2-point game, about a 50-point game. Wright State didn't show up, but you had Nevada in overtime, Georgia State hanging with Cincinnati. And then God, when you look at the two games in the round of 32, wow, you certainly got your money's worth at these.
Yeah, those games in Nashville and Stalica, I have to talk to you about them and about Nevada being down big against Texas, coming back, and then the second biggest, tied for the second biggest comeback in NCAA tournament history against your crosstown rivals there from Cincinnati. How good were you feeling watching Cincinnati lose?
wait, can I ask, what's number one? We all know who number one is. Lee, who's number one? Who's number one? The biggest blown lead ever. It's Tim Clouse at Iona, the BYU game.
I know. That's right. You know what? I immediately defaulted to a Maryland Duke game, but that was a regular season last minute game. Yeah, it is. Tim Clouse. Well, they never play defense. Here's the thing. When the Iona one happened, I wasn't surprised, just because the way BYU play was a perfect match for the maximum Clousing to happen. And I believe it was the first four game, was it not?
It was, so that is the asterisk.
It's still hard for me to – I know it's a tournament game. No disrespect, but this, John, was on another level. I personally went to go get dinner with 10 minutes to go because it was a 20-point game. I thought surely all the way Cincinnati fails to make the second weekend, that surely this would not be another one.
This had to be probably even more statistically improbable than Virginia falling behind by 20, because Cincinnati's another team that you get them up 22. They're pretty much – they're the second biggest master lock defense that you're going to find. I'll confess I did not see most of that game in person. I was getting into the arena with about 4 minutes left in the second half.
The meaningful part then. Yeah. The rest of the game was a blowout.
I was listening to another blowout on the radio that we'll get to a little bit later. But sadly, it seemed when Cincinnati did have a chance to win the game with Kane Broom driving down the lane, he bobbles the ball, so he's not able to get a shot off. And Nevada, they solved who John Rothstein is affectionately called the problem.
Yeah. Replacing Gary Clark's going to be a problem. I mean, Kane Broom can't be the guy with the ball in his hands at the end there. He's a good player, but I have no idea. It was like the cherry on top of the poop sundae. That was how they tried to just save the last part of the house from burning down.
Well, Tytel, we now have, for the first time ever since they started seeding teams, none of the top four seeds made it to the regional semifinals. We've got a 5, we've got a 7, we've got a 9, we've got an 11. Who comes out of this mess at this point?
So it's easy to say Kentucky because they're the best remaining seed and they have all the talent. They are the youngest team in the nation, so that is some cause for concern. I think that even though like Cinderella is smiling on this whole freaking region, that I'm going to go with Kentucky just because Calipari has proven he can coach in March. Obviously the fact that they can win without making a 3, like was said, is amazing. If you don't like betting against God and Sister Jean, I wouldn't necessarily think about that. One stat I want to throw out there. If you look at the 2015 NC State Wolfpack, which why would you mention that, John? Did the Martin Twins and Cincinnati's Kyle Washington, wait for it, coming off the bench? Mark Godfrey is the best recruiter in the history of the world.
Yeah, well, there might be some reasons for that. that may be coming up in a state of California court near you.
Well, let's go ahead and switch regions here. And Sleek, I've got to go back to you. I know you don't want to hear it, but let's start in the other games that were played in Nashville, if you don't want to run away, where Xavier, we thought, looked comfortably into the Sweet 16 yesterday until something happened against Florida State.
Well, all night long, Xavier was plagued by both foul trouble as well as subpar foul shooting, at least compared to the 76% that they had been shooting all year. Last night, they were 19 for 30 and ended up leaving about, I would say, compared to what they had during the regular season, a 5 or 6 point difference would have been huge in the final minute, where instead of being down 3 points, they would have at least been up 3 and forced Florida State to play the foul game a little bit. But credit to the Noles for discovering during the game that Xavier was having trouble adjusting to some of the quick play of their guards, and Gooden and McKira were both getting into foul trouble, and also turning it over against Florida State's pressure, where even though Florida State was getting called with a number of fouls themselves, if you're giving up just 1 point of possession, that's more palatable for them. And I hate to say this, credit to Leonard Hamilton for finding a way to win in the second round.
Yeah.
The weirdest thing happened yesterday with two games against teams from Cincinnati. In the Nevada game, Eric Musselman gets a technical foul, which, by the way, is why I left to go get food, because I was like, this is it. And then Nevada turns it around. Yesterday in the Florida State game, Leonard Hamilton, it was more his player. They almost came to blows in a timeout. And after that, Florida State took off. It was just the strangest thing. You know, there's more than one way to skin a cat, to use the really creepy phrase that somehow is popular. And, you know, it's a testament to, you know, sometimes as a coach, you got to show a little fire, but within reason, you know. And thankfully, Leonard Hamilton, as angry as it looked, it wasn't a really nasty confrontation. It was just the heat of the moment. But it seemed to really refocus the Seminoles.
Well, David, we had in Boise, amazingly, a pod there in the West region that actually held form. All three games were pretty good games, but 4 seed beat the 5 seed. For the first time so far in the show, we're talking about normalcy.
Right. Ohio State led for most of the game, but South Dakota State, I'm sorry, just kept it within reach, even tied it a couple times, but couldn't really get over the top. Same with Greensboro against Gonzaga. That one. Came down to the final.
Basket by the Zags won that one for them. That was a great game, actually.
Yeah, it was. And a great showing by Greensboro. And again, I have to give the shout out because I can. The SoCon was really fun to watch this year. East Tennessee State, another really good team. And, you'd like to think that had Greensboro not gotten in, another team could have probably gotten there. But as much fun as it would have been to see them do it, it was still a really good showing. It was a good game. And then the other game, Ohio State Gonzaga in the round of 32, was back and forth. Gonzaga didn't really kind of get control of it until the final minutes. So they're on their way to Los Angeles. And Chad, this little pod here held form. The protected seat got through. And that means that you might have a chance to win free chili. If you're watching this, be sure and log on to the website. Check out.
No. Yeah, we'll get free chili a little bit.
That's not chili. That's – no. I don't care what they call it. That's crap. Also, it's interesting they're going to Los Angeles because that's where I think the camera position was for their subregion. That's good to see.
Tytel, the pod in Wichita, we saw Houston escape with a 2-point win over San Diego State and then probably one of the best finishes of the tournament, that Houston-Michigan game.
I think it was by far, as exciting as Loyola's been and as amazing as the comebacks as Nevada has had, I think Jordan Poole's shot. You have a freshman coming off the bench and 3 seconds left, and he says he practices it, and I don't put anything past Coach Beilein. He's amazing. But I didn't think it was going in, and then it went in, and then he became like Desmond Howard. Like, talk about a Michigan guy. They couldn't catch him. He's running around the court with 6 guys, and they couldn't get him down. I feel terrible for Houston. They deserved to win until they didn't. Rob
Gray.
Thank you. Gray. Played like an All-American and
has
a bright future ahead of him. What's interesting is that Michigan has only played one SEC team all year before they have Texas A&M coming up. Name that team.
Was it Tennessee?
It was not.
Vandy?
Strike two.
Go ahead.
I'm not good
at LSU. Trying. They lost in Hawaii.
Oh, yeah.
In December by 2 points. Obviously, it's a whole other season. They blew a 9-point lead with 5 minutes left. So even if Michigan is up late against this SEC team this week, don't be so sure.
Yeah, and Houston, what it came down to was missed free throws. Three huge missed free throws late.
Yeah, it was really just – Chad, just as someone who's watched Houston this year, it was – they're not a great foul shooting team, but they're not terrible. And it just – it felt like it was – the number of things that had to break against them really was what we saw. But it felt like – it was not going well. That last minute it seemed to be building – to an awful crescendo for them. And the thing that all anybody in my neck of the woods is talking about is like, it, Kelvin Sampson did a great job. You got to guard the inbounder. You can't let Michigan get the ball for free to half court. I mean, you've got to – because even if you're able to double team somebody, well, three of the guys on the play aren't going to touch the ball, so it's really pointless. And that was what helped Michigan a lot. They were able to get a great look because the first 45 feet, they didn't really have to do much of anything.
Houston, it felt like, had a really big year. They were fun to watch, but it felt like they were kind of under the spotlight a little bit. And their fans started showing up more and more at the end. But how big would this have been for what really is a storied program, but at the same time that's been dormant for several decades now? Like, would this have really moved the needle and gotten some electricity around that program and around that city had they been able to win this and move on to the Sweet 16? Lee can probably speak to that.
Dave, they still have one big problem, and that's the fact that they play in the American. So
yeah, I know. I mean, I see them a lot, and I couldn't believe they hadn't won a tournament game since the year I was born, 84. And I actually had them playing Carolina in my bracket, so that hurt for me. But, you know, this year, they and Cincinnati, typical American, they have two really good teams. Neither of them are actually playing on campus all year. Houston was playing at Texas Southern's campus, and that, you know, it's tough. Houston never drew at home, even when they were getting better the last few years. But I was surprised. UConn played there the last game of the regular season, and they actually had a really good crowd there
Texas
Southern. And so next year they go back on campus, and as disappointing and as much of a punch in the gut this exit is, the fact that they returned so much, I think there's really no reason why Houston shouldn't have some really great crowds next year at home, similar to what we saw at SMU at Moody when they were building things up a couple years ago. So I do think that as empty as it's been for Houston basketball, as awful as that game was with the ending, that I think they're going to be really probably the class of the conference next year, to what degree you respect that. I actually also think they're good.
All right, well, we've got one more pod to hit here in the West region, and Tytel, of all the games that I saw this weekend, probably the most shocking, after Virginia, was what Texas A&M did to North Carolina yesterday. I still haven't figured out what the hell happened to that game.
I didn't think size mattered in the tourney. I thought it was about having great guard play, but Tyler Davis and Robert Williams combined in the two games, 53 points, 51 rebounds, 9 blocks. I mean, like at Twin Towers.
I mean, this was the Texas A&M team that we saw against West Virginia opening night of the season, suddenly coming back, though, after they disappeared for 3 months in there, wasn't it?
Yes, they've had injuries and suspensions, as everybody can tell you and remind you. So I was still stunned. I mean, both the way that they dominated and the fact that they did it against the defending champs.
Right. And Stalika, we now have a West region set up with Florida State, Gonzaga, Michigan, A&M. No one seed, no two seed. In fact, on Thursday night, no one or two seed will be playing, I believe, for the first time ever. So what do you think happens with this region?
And if not for the buzzer beater, we would have been out a 1, a 2, and a 3 right here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So honestly, I like Gonzaga probably the best out of these four teams. And even had Xavier survived against Florida State last night, after seeing both teams play, I would still like Gonzaga's chances out of this bunch of four right here. But A&M can certainly make things interesting. I think they'll probably beat Michigan, but probably just fall a game short in the West.
Well, let's scoot over to the Midwest here, where it started off with Tytel, your Penn team played Kansas, and Seton Hall played NC State, and then Kansas played Seton Hall. And what more can we talk about what happened in Wichita?
I'll keep it short and sweet. So my Quakers, who barely made the tournament at all, Harvard had us on the ropes. We were down 13 in the first half on our home court, and then we went on a 24-0 run that saved the season. Penn was up 10 in the first half on Kansas. I know we lost. I just like saying Penn was up 10 on Kansas in Wichita in the first half.
But David, the San Diego pod, after a real good game between Auburn and Charleston, actually,
right.
Another shocking result of the second round just by that score in that Clemson-Auburn game.
Yeah, it was kind of shocking. Auburn had been kind of fading. In fact, I was half expecting – I was actually expecting a 12-13 game here with how well New Mexico State has been playing versus, like, Clemson, while having a big year, lost such a key player to an injury and just hadn't looked the same since then. Auburn also dealing with injuries. But Clemson just – boat raced them. I mean, blew their doors off, blew their roof off, blew the whole damn car up. And you just kind of hate it for Auburn, because I like to say that this is a program that hires the right people and has done things the right way. And you just hate to see them go out against Clemson like that.
Yeah,
in some ways, we're starting to see some parallels between Clemson's last Sweet 16 back in 1997, that also started red hot, including a fast start in the ACC, where both teams went into kind of a hibernation mode in February and March, but after regrouping, they had two pretty decisive wins. And if you remember your history from that year, they did go to double overtime against Minnesota before ultimately losing to the Gophers that year.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, but Lee, I've got to ask you what happened in Detroit, though, because I know you're a Chip Boeheim fan.
Before you do, I just, because it was something you said. For me, Clemson Auburn was by far the most shocking thing. Carolina doing that, I know they went out the way they went out. Well, also, A&M's really good. And, you know, it's almost like a team where Luke May is their best player. You can't, I could see that exit happening. Clemson-Auburn was – I know Auburn had faded, but that was a savage beating. And there are – I know that John – there are questions about Arizona going forward, but there are a lot of questions about Auburn going forward for very similar reasons. And I really wonder what the hammer is about to come down there, just as much as with Arizona. I mean, that was – it wasn't even a no-show. It was like Auburn season had never happened. I was so impressed with Clemson. And for them, that they stuck with Brad Brownell, they're keeping things realistic. They got an arena renovation done where they had to play off campus for a year. And now I think Clemson, I mean, it's Clemson, but we said the same thing about Clemson football. Maybe now this is the start of something where Clemson can really move themselves into the upper echelon of the ACC. With you, now I was going to say it's because, well, Syracuse isn't really the same as what they used to be. But, Chad, the new normal is that Syracuse gets into a tournament they shouldn't be in and then wins at least two games. And that's what happened.
We're three games already. Three. They beat Arizona State also. Don't forget that.
What happened was, for the second time in recent memory, a Big Ten team faced Syracuse and seemed surprised they were playing a zone defense. It was like they weren't expecting it. Just as when they played Indiana a couple of years ago. And it's enraging. Not just because I hate Syracuse, but just logic would tell you. Why is this surprising?
You're dead right, right? To tell, it looked like Michigan State had no idea what they were doing in this, especially in the second half. You know, they had the lead a little bit most of the way. Then midway through the second half, they just, you know, they collapsed. There was nothing there. I mean, I was surprised that it was only a 2-point final the way they were playing.
The offense was atrocious. What's weird is that Syracuse was not playing much better. 1 of 8 from behind the arc. They allowed 29 offensive rebounds. I haven't checked if that's a record, but it sounds like a record, because how on earth does that happen in a major college basketball game?
This is a Syracuse team that's been ranked in the 300s nationally in all the offensive ratings all season. You know Syracuse is going to suck. And all you got to do is put 60 points on the board and you win the game, right?
Except I thought that Syracuse would suck from the free throw line as well. And if there's one thing that won them the game, they had a 24-11 advantage and made free throws over the Spartans. Not that Michigan State is amazing at getting to the line or converting. Syracuse is a terrible free throw shooting team for as long as I can remember.
Absolutely. That's a great call. And it's even – I can't even say Syracuse played good defense, because Michigan State got the ball back every time. How do you get that many offensive rebounds when they shoot 61 field goal attempts? That is a disgraceful loss by Michigan State. I don't know who the heck's going to be the coach of that team next year. That is embarrassing, Michigan State. Go away. Oh, my God. I'm sick of Tom Izzo. It's not even just the Nasser thing. The guy's an overrated coach. You can't lose that game. You
Let us know how you feel for real here, Lee.
Sorry.
Lee, I think the problem was Michigan State just wasn't expecting that zone.
Yeah, no, well, and, you know, it's not like I dislike Michigan State at all, having to endure an entire Final Four in person of how Michigan State saved Detroit. Well, the game was in Detroit, and if Detroit had been saved, they killed it off again, because that was an atrocious offensive performance. There's just no excuse for that. None. And well, I don't care if you haven't seen the zone or you have seen a zone. It's not that hard. It's really not. I'm going to stop before I have a heart attack. I'll stop.
Yeah, let's move on here. Stalika, we're talking about a team that did play well and really looked good the first two rounds. How about this Duke team and what they did both to Iona and then to Rhode Island?
They were one of two teams that looked very solid in Pittsburgh. It seemed like Rhode Island was going to give them a little bit of a better game early on, but too much Marvin Bagley, too much Grayson Allen. Easy call for Duke to come out of the first two rounds unscathed here.
Yeah. So, David, what do you see happening in the Midwest here? Kansas versus Clemson, Syracuse versus Duke. A little bit of normalcy. At least we've got a one and a two still alive here.
Well, I mean, unlike Michigan State, who, I mean, Howard, I guess Syracuse just really surprised them with that zone. I don't think Duke is going to be as unprepared for it, and just based on how they've played against them during the year and what they've done in the first two rounds, it's hard for me to see Syracuse winning another game, which means that they probably will, and they'll face Kansas in the Elite Eight and beat them too, and this will all happen just to annoy me.
Oh, they're definitely going to the Final Four. Well, I mean, and I thought we saw best case scenario Duke, and so many crazy things have happened in this tournament. Duke's just plodding along. They're just under the radar getting stuff done, and I almost would make them the favorite right now, if not for Villanova, just because so many other weird things have happened that there are no distractions right now. They're a Nike school, so the Adidas thing isn't a concern, which affects, like, the rest of the field. And Coach K. So, I mean, and to take apart a team coached by Dan Hurley, who is one of the finest coaches in America, of course, that was really impressive. And, you know, in all seriousness, credit to URI, too. Some, you know, they went out there, they played hard, they just got beat. Like, there's no regrets for them. They're not what, like Kane Broome, the poor guy might not sleep for the next 5 years. URI, that's the way you want to go. You play hard against Duke. If it's not enough, it's not enough. But the Blue Devils are clicking at the right time of the year.
Yeah, they are.
And no one's talking about it. And it's I'm not saying we need to talk more about Duke just on a personal preference, but I mean, I can't remember a Duke team getting less discussion nationally than this one.
I think they're about to get a lot of discussion.
Let's over to the other team that I think is going to get a lot of discussion for the next weekend also. Titel, Villanova took care of Radford, looked really impressive against an Alabama team that had gotten snuck by Virginia Tech also.
When you win a pair of games by 20 points, even if it's against the 16 and the 9 seed, you know that you're talking about a legitimate contender to win it all. They're doing it from distance, 14 threes in both games. They just can't be stopped. Even more amazing, everybody talks about how important it is to have veterans this time of year, and they have plenty of veterans with Brunson and a huge junior class of guys who have rings from a couple of years ago. You know how many times a senior has scored a point for them in the tourney this year? 0 points by seniors.
I mean, are we ready for the they should reseed the Final Four discussion?
No, because, well, I'm never ready for that.
Hold on a second. I got something for you, Lee.
I don't want them to, but I'm saying it will be a thing that people will discuss because it seems like, and I don't know why I would question this happening in the first year where a 16's beaten a 1, it seems like we're headed for a Nova Duke on one half of the Final Four, and I mean, you just spin a wheel on the other side. So that'll be interesting if it plays out that way.
Well, Sleek, I've got to ask you about what happened in San Diego, because you are the number one Dan D'Antoni fan out there with the T-shirt and jacket look. great win over Wichita State. Came up a little short against the rivals there, West Virginia, though.
I think for Marshall.
A little short.
A little short.
Marshall, just a little bit.
It was just good enough to have, John Elmore, and I think the other guy, Penava, having some of the performances of their lives, at least as far as taking Wichita State out of the bracket. Granted, the final minutes of that game were pretty unwatchable when you consider how much time was devoted to instant replay. But
it just seemed
like Marshall had nothing left in the tank for West Virginia. Maybe it is a good thing that they didn't have their annual rivalry matchup this year.
I don't think that's coming out.
It might soon. But, David, the game's at Dallas. First of all, that first four games. So congrats to the Bonnies for picking up their first tourney win in forever in that first four game over UCLA. But they kind of got run out of the building by Florida. And Bonnies fans who decided that they wanted to blame the NCAA selection committee for that loss because they had to play three games in 6 days or something ridiculous. They should be thankful they were in the tournament. So
yeah.
I don't that argument.
Well, they deserved to be in the tournament.
It was, you know, I was all on board with the Bonnies until their fans got a little too whiny there. But how about the rest of the stuff?
Shout out to welders everywhere. Shout out Yana Van Brendekoff. You know, good for them.
Okay, yeah. So the other games in Dallas, SFA, who I liked during the year, I know that they had some really bad slip-ups. I mean, they just fell all over themselves during a couple of Southland games. But I always thought their ceiling was high, and how could you not when you look at their win at LSU, how well they played at Missouri, a few other things they did out of conference. I thought that if anyone out of the Southland had the makeups to win a game, it was them. And they get out there against Texas Tech. It was a great atmosphere, two Texas teams playing in Dallas. SFA led for most of the game. Texas Tech, another great story on, albeit a higher level. The job Chris Beard has done there is sensational. National Coach of the Year caliber job there, turning them around. Getting the big win, SFA went cold in the final minutes of the game. They just could not buy a basket, but their effort was there. And then SFA's coach lost his mind after the game and blamed the loss on millennials. And one of the most bizarre things that I have ever heard after – and here's the thing. Like, that was probably their best effort of the season. You hate that it ended that way. But how can you crap on your team after that effort? Am I wrong in that? You all saw the same thing I did, so I'm curious.
Well, I don't know if it was more bizarre than Cronin's post-game, but it was – yeah. It's a newer coach, frustrated. They'll be back if they can just keep their coach for, you know, a little bit here, you know, for
Texas
one.
Texas Tech now down to the Sweet 16 with the win over Florida also. So, you know, real nice showing by the Red Wings.
They remain the best team nobody talked about. It's amazing. Yeah.
Finally, we had the Crossroads Classic in Detroit there, Tytel, with Butler and Purdue getting through to the second round, and a pretty good game there, with Purdue escaping and surviving, I guess we call it.
I'll keep it short because Stalika is the king of the Crosstown Classic. A huge win over Butler by 3 points, and they did it without the big man Isaac Haas and his illegal elbow brace, thanks to making 11 threes from behind the arc. Stalika, I thought that the best team in Indiana might have been a different team, but Purdue looked pretty good.
Well, Butler did start off pretty well. I think they had gotten out to an 8 or 9 point lead thanks to guys like Martin and Baldwin hitting from deep. But after Purdue seemed to make their run, Butler never went away and actually cut the lead down to 3 in the final minute before Purdue finally iced it at the line.
Well, here we go. We've got Villanova, West Virginia, Texas Tech, Purdue, probably the chalkiest region by far, with only a 5 there replacing a 4. But, Lee, what do you see coming out of this region here? I think we got 2 really fun games coming up this week, that's for certain.
Yeah, Nova, West Virginia is going to be just an awesome watch. Just shot makers all over the damn place. I like Villanova just because it'd be crazy not to right now with what we've seen. But I'll tell you this, I really think that West Virginia might be the second best team right now of those 4. just in terms of Purdue with the injury issues and, you know, the pedigree, but I expect Nova to come out of this. Texas Tech Purdue is kind of an odd one, but so I'm not entirely sure what to expect. I was disappointed. I had higher expectations for Purdue in terms of when I hear possibly illegal arm brace, I'm kind of expecting a Terminator-like thing, kind of a full rig. And when it was just like a compression sleeve, I was personally disappointed. But it's going to – Texas Tech's throwing – this is weird to say. Butler's a good team, but I think Texas Tech's a way more athletic team than what Butler brought to Purdue. And it'll be interesting to see how – Purdue's able to defend it. I think Purdue gets through, but I know it's not a very bold pick. I have a 1-2 regional final, but I mean, Nova West Virginia kind of feels overtimey to me. Like, I would not be surprised to see them playing very late into the Boston night. And given Nova's history in that building, yeah, when they hit the floater at the buzzer, remember when Pitt was an Elite Eight? Remember when that was a thing that happened when they had a basketball team? So Nova has some good history in Boston that they'll be looking to call back.
I'm trying to not remember how Pitt ended up in the Elite Eight that year to begin with.
Let me run through each of you now for what I'll call revised Final Four picks. I'll tell you personally, my Final Four was Kentucky, Michigan, Villanova, Kansas, with Nova winning it all. I'm not moving, but all of you have got a little moving to do. So, David, let me start with you. Who is your Final Four and your national champion now that we're down to the Sweet 16?
I've got to go with probably – I'm going with Kentucky, the Zags. I think they're going to be back in the Final Four for the second year in a row. I'm going to go with Texas Tech out of this region, and I think it gets there by matchups, because the last time they played at West Virginia, you may have remembered, they took a team – they basically left three starters behind, went to West Virginia, and lost by about a million. I just think that the familiarity and the full roster will put them past West Virginia. This is assuming West Virginia gets by Nova, but again, West Virginia, a pressing team, a real high pressure team. Nova, while good, still deals with depth. I could see, like what Lee said, it being an overtime type of game, but I think West Virginia gets it done and then Tech gets by them just because of the familiarity and the way, and I just really like Chris Beard. And then out of the other region, I'm going with Duke, as much as I don't want to.
And your champion?
Duke, as much as I don't want to.
Stalika, what do you think?
I would have gone with Purdue over Villanova initially, but of course that was before the injury issue for Haas, so definitely going to take Villanova out of that region. I think Duke appends Kansas in a close regional final in Omaha, and I'd already teased on the other side where Gonzaga will come out of the West and Kentucky will come out of the South.
And winning it all would be?
I am going to take Villanova out of that bunch, because when I saw, what is it, Villanova and Duke running through their games, nobody is beating the Wildcats when they are at their best, and I think they're more likely to play a complete game at this point.
Tytel, what do you think?
I like Stalika's picks a lot. I have Villanova winning it all in my bracket, so I'm going to have them obviously coming out of the East. Although, do not sleep on West Virginia. They're going to have a academic All-American of the Year and arguably the best defensive player in the year all up in Jalen Brunson's face for 40 minutes tomorrow or this week. And if you think about it, West Virginia, I don't know what the record is for the most number one seeds played in a season. They beat Virginia in December. They've already lost to Kansas three times. If they beat Villanova, they could end up playing Kansas six times. They played a number one seed this season, possibly unbelievable. But in answer to your question, Villanova, I got Duke over Kansas in a rematch of Final Fours from the past. I'll pick Kentucky out of the South based purely on talent. But after that thing has been decimated, I would not be surprised by anybody coming out of there. And I had Gonzaga in my Final Four. I have some doubts because they've looked very average. But I'll go with Villanova, Duke, Gonzaga, Kentucky.
Little fun fact, yeah. Tytel, Seton Hall is also 0-6 against number one seeds after this weekend. Ooh. They lost three. Yeah, they lost two to Xavier and also, wait a minute, no, not six, but they did lose to Villanova twice. So they're still going to be 0-5 and within the ballpark.
Yeah, I mean, if you were in the Big East, you had four at least games. So,
yeah.
Lee, what do you think? Who's your final four? Who's your national?
I mean, I did have a couple picks right. My West Virginia Marshall, my Loyola Chicago Tennessee picks were correct. I didn't really get a lot of the South right outside of that, to say the least. I mean, it's so cool to me that we're Loyola or Nevada are 40 minutes from the Final Four. I think that's awesome. I think we're getting a Kentucky Loyola actually regional final. But I think Kentucky, I mean, I hope I'm wrong because it would just be an amazing story. But God, if it's Kansas State, that's just boring. But Kansas State in the Final Four would be like a year after South Carolina in the Final Four, basically. One of those is enough. I think I think Kentucky, UK, not KU. UK comes out of the South. I originally had – I had Virginia, Carolina, Purdue, and Duke, so – half of that can still happen. Coming out of the West, I kind of like Michigan. I know it's weird, but I think a Michigan-Gonzaga regional final would be a lot of fun. And I think Michigan will squeak it out just because I really trust that team and that coach in that scenario. Out of the Midwest, like I have Duke, but I mean, it would make complete sense for the universe to piss me off and have Syracuse somehow getting to play Clemson instead of Kansas too. Like, I think Duke will get through that. And then, I mean, the team I picked to win it all, which was kind of a bargain pick. I didn't realize how few people would pick them, and it was before the injury. I had Purdue winning the whole thing, which in a vacuum sounds ridiculous, and even more so now. But I don't anymore think that Purdue will come out of the East, even though that's what's in my bracket. I do think it'll be Villanova. And I'm going to pick Nova to win it all out of the four of them for the exact same reason Salika just gave. I trust Nova more to bring it for 40 minutes, even though I think Duke's ceiling is higher. Like, it's obvious Duke has a way higher ceiling because of their talent level. But at a certain point, when you're 35 games into the season, it's ridiculous to expect it to show up at this point when, while it's been good and while I think they're playing their best basketball of the year right now, I don't think they're going to reach the heights that everyone thought they would back in October. That could still be a Final Four trip, and that's not bad. I just think Villanova is a more reliable team, and I think Nova over Duke in one semi. I've got Kentucky over Michigan in the other semi, and I have Villanova. I have an all Wildcat title game in my head. I've got Nova over Kentucky in the title game.
I'll tell you what, on that note, let me go ahead and pull that down and run through each of you for any other final thoughts about what we've seen, what's coming up, or anything else to do with college basketball at all. Salika, let me start with you.
We didn't hit on this when we were mentioning Kansas over Seton Hall, but Angel Delgado had one of the all-time stat lines in his final game, 24 points, 23 rebounds. I believe that was the most anyone has ever done against a one seed going since 1984. I want to say.
An impressive 2020 game by him. Very impressive in his final game. Tytel.
I just want to give a little shout out to Kelsey Mitchell of the Buckeyes. So she finished her college career tonight in a 95-78 loss to the Cinderella story. Number 11 seed Central Michigan making the Sweet 16. 3,402 points. Number 2 all-time in D1 women's history. What's funny? She's not even the Kelsey with the most points because Kelsey Plum of Washington last year finished with 3,527 points. That being said, those ladies are number 2 and 3 all-time, men's or women's. Maravich, of course, from LSU, 36-67, number 1. Congrats, Kelsey Mitchell, on a fantastic career.
And I do want to add a little bit to John T's final thought because Central Michigan and Buffalo are going to the Sweet 16 for the women this year.
Yeah, and Salika, can you correct me if I'm wrong? I think this was Central Michigan's first ever tournament appearance as well on the women's side.
I'm not necessarily certain that was their first appearance, but it was their first victory against LSU the other night.
Okay. Lee, any other final thoughts from you?
Wow. I know Chad is as thrilled as I am that we're now a women's basketball podcast. Interesting. On the women's side, my point
is – as a UConn fan here.
Yeah. No, it's, I mean, They won by a third as many points as they did in the last game. #FireGino. It's a movement, people. I am sick of the lack of standards in this. No. To that end, I mean, the MAC in the women's side is similar to what I wanted to talk about, which is Conference USA on the men's side. I'm really interested to see going forward if they finally get some respect. Now, the MAC got respect in that they had two teams picked on the women's side, but they're both 11 seeds, and they're both going to the Sweet 16. Whereas with Marshall's win, I believe that's, what, 3 out of the last 4 years in which Conference USA's representative has won a game in the NCAA tournament. And for as much of a tire fire as Conference USA has been with realignment, with TV deals, with if you can find the games, their teams have brought it in March. And I'm really – congrats to Marshall for – you know, it ended poorly for them, but they a great job in the first round. And I'm interested to see if this is maybe the a turning point where maybe there's some positivity in that conference. Because as a basketball league, Conference USA is really starting to get things together. And I'll be interested to see what their out-of-conference schedules look like for the Marshalls and Middle Tennessees next year. As always, I hope they will get some opportunities, but I wonder if they will. Not to be confused with St. Mary's, who actively avoids any sort of challenge and deserved everything they got.
It's actually 4 years.
Yeah,
in
4 years in a row.
4 in a row.
UAB,
USA. So shout out to the UTSAs and the North Texases and the Florida alternate universities of the world. Good for them, and it's good to see maybe that conference is going to get a little respect back, you'd hope. And maybe next year they get – I mean, their team can wear white in the first game. Who knows?
David, let me let you finish things off here, your final thoughts.
Okay, to build a little – two things. First, I'm going to build a little bit on what Lee said, but just a little bit. When you look at the success that some of these teams have had, UMBC, Loyola, maybe not so much Loyola, but UNC Greensboro giving Gonzaga a game and Conference USA Marshall, for instance, it kind of makes me wonder, you and Stalika and I do the Under the Radar podcast, and at no point, including now, did we feel that Marshall was even the best team in their league. For most of the year, we thought East Tennessee State was better than Greensboro. We certainly thought Vermont was better than UMBC. And it kind of raises the question, everybody criticizes the committee. They're going to do that anyway. I'm not so sure it's the committee. I'm not even so sure it's the criteria the committee evaluates. The real problem is just during the season, there are too many good teams outside the Power Five that just aren't given the opportunities or the platforms they need to prove themselves. And I think that's what needs fixing. It isn't the committee needs to take more mid-majors or this or that. I think that they need to come up with some sort of way to get these teams more chances. Now, I don't know the best way to do that. Would it be possible to play exempt tournaments later in the year instead of November so you could get the good teams into those tournaments that are having good years and get them a chance? That's probably not practical, but it's the best idea I could come up with. And the committee does get things wrong. They did get things wrong. That's why we've seen so much carnage. And one of the things that they clearly got wrong was that they didn't take Nebraska. They didn't consider the dark web conspiracy.
Oh, God. By the way, to quickly move on to the subject, it's almost as if there could only be an in-season competition between teams that are known for busting brackets from mid-majors. If only there was a better way. Bring back bracket busters.
Yes, and bring it back in a bigger degree. Instead of one game, make it two or three. Like, put them in groups of four and play round robins.
How about instead of bringing back bracket busters, every conference expands their schedule and now there's fewer chances? Because that's what's happening.
Yes.
Well, this is going to be the subject of probably multiple off-season podcasts. But on that note, I do want to actually finish things up here. For those of you that wanted to hear about the NIT, the CBI, the CIT, David is going to be doing about half an hour on that all by himself right after I hit the stop button on this recording. So those of you that want to listen to that, feel free. There's one other tournament we've got to very briefly mention before we end ACA. Here. A little bit of bad news about our ACA tournament. David, we were giving away free chili to all the fans, and we did not have enough for some reason. Had a riot. It was ugly scene. Unfortunately, this year's ACA has been canceled. It is
the second year in a row, Chad.
I know.
I think you've been mismanaging this whole event, Chad.
Now, consistency is underrated.
Most of the teams didn't even show up, Chad.
Yeah.
Can't have a tournament with no teams.
But we will try again with the 2019. We will try again.
Lee, sorry, final, Chad. It's just another casualty of the fall of Atlantic City. It's sad, really. You hate to see that.
On that note, in the fall of Atlantic City, my backyard here, on behalf of John Tytel, John Stalica, Lee Delvecchio, David Griggs, Tim Miles, and anybody else that might be watching, thanks for joining us. We'll be back again next week with our Final Four edition. Talk to you soon.